I guess if there's not someone to give you your vows, you would wait longer. I don't know, because I feel I took mine pretty quickly.
Our teacher.
Mm-hmm. Or someone that you want to take them from. Yeah. Yeah, that could be a reason. Okay, we're going to go over these two and do the summary, and then we're going to break into pairs and talk about the six. Okay. On to number five. So number five, the fifth step, is you collect karma based upon thinking of the object with attachment or aversion, or acting out of attachment or aversion. And this is kind of, you could look at this a lot of different ways, actually, but I think how this happened to Gollum, I don't know if this was his name at first, but he was like a normal hobbit, I believe, and then he started becoming like more and more obsessed with the ring and became more and more of a hermit and started turning into this little monster. So that's kind of how I was thinking about anger and jealousy and all these negative emotions that are planting all these seeds. They're turning us slowly into like this unhappy Gollum monster. And it kind of looks like he's in hell, actually, there. Like a hot hell. So it's sending us to this place where we don't want to be. Where there's just going to be unhappiness. And this goes back to what we were talking about before. If we don't understand the nature of the annoying person at work or at school or even at home, then we think... okay, I'm just going to avoid them. Or we'll try to do some action at the office that'll permanently get rid of this person, or in some small way discredit the person with your friends or with other people. Make sure they don't have any authority at work or maybe at home or even school. We start doing all those little things because we don't understand. We don't understand what we're doing. It's like we've gone crazy. And the minute we do something like that, the minute we talk back to this person or talk about them, we're collecting karmic seeds that are going to bring us unhappiness. We think we're hurting the other person, but we're not. We're not hurting the other person. You know, sometimes in the moment, it looks like we're causing them discomfort. But really, if they don't have the seeds for that, they're not going to experience it that way. We don't know their experience on the other side. But we are definitely planting the seeds for that in the future when we're doing it. There's a famous quote, a famous idea that if our mother went crazy and she came at us with a knife, would we just immediately try to stab her? Would we try to kill her? We wouldn't do that. We would say, no, it's our mother. We'd watch her carefully. We try to figure out how we can get the knife away from her and then get the knife away from her and maybe, you know, subdue her and get her help. We wouldn't just automatically turn and try to stab her. We just wouldn't do that. And we can think of all the annoying people that we know in our life this way. So if we think of them as our mother who's gone crazy, and it really, we can think to like the idea of past and future lives. If we've lived countless lives, we've talked about this before, then we've had every relation to every person. So every being has been our mother. And it's not as though in this lifetime when our mother passes away, then she's not our mother anymore. She's always our mother. So the same for countless beings from countless lives. So in a way, it is like our mother's going crazy when we see people, you know, running planes into buildings, blowing up cities, even just yelling at someone, getting angry at us. It's the same thing, too.
But how would you react if someone did come at you? Would you want to defend yourself, or self-defense, or...
Well, And has what?
If someone's coming at me and was going to stab me, mm-hmm. would it be self-defense, or would I just let it happen?
Well, what do you think karmically? Like, what seed would you want to plant?
Well, I wouldn't want to get stabbed.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would try to subdue them, or, I don't know, not harm them, but... I mean,
because there is a way where your life's important, too.
Yeah.
And they're... If they are able to stab you, if they are able to kill you, they're committing a huge negative karmic seed that they're going to have to see in the future. So there's a way of which we get to, you know, it seems to me at a higher level, where out of concern for them, oh my gosh, like we're talking about, this is my mother, she's gone crazy, I'm not going to let her hurt me, but I'm not going to beat the crap out of her either. You know, I'm going to do whatever I can to protect myself, to get the knife away from this person, hopefully without any harm to anybody, with that sort of intention. It doesn't mean that it always happens. But it's about changing our minds and looking at things a different way. Not reacting out of, just like with the annoying kid, not reacting out of like, I hate you and I want to destroy you, but oh my gosh, you've gone crazy, I have to help you. And my life's important. Each of our lives are important. We have to reach Buddhahood because there's countless beings who are waiting just for us. There's not anyone else that they're waiting for. Just as you see teachers with students, those students were waiting for that teacher. So that's why each of us has to do that. So at the same time, our life is precious, but not as in my life's more important than yours, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of tricky questions, but the right thing to do just about never is harming someone else, unless we're a really high practitioner and we're doing it out of love. There's stories of where... I don't remember all the particulars, but somebody's, this guy's on a ship and he's going to kill everyone on the ship. And this one person knows that he's going to do this, and so he kills that person. And this is one of the Jataka tales, I believe is what it is, which are the stories of the Buddha's past lives. So that was the Buddha who did that. He wasn't the Buddha yet. I think he was probably a high bodhisattva. But he did that to protect that person from planting this terrible karmic seed.
Help others?
The way the story's told is he did it for that, out of love for that person. Maybe it was also for the other two. Yeah, so there's a lot of... And also... We have, like, varying degrees of that situation all the time. Just about never do we have someone pull a knife on us and try to kill us. Because we're lucky. We live in a world where that doesn't happen every day. But what does happen on a regular basis, people annoy us. Someone gets in front of you in line and it really pisses you off. It's the same thing. It's the same seed. And the seeds grow. So over time, it could grow into somebody causing us physical harm. Could come from that tiny little irritation towards one person in line or when we're driving, that sort of thing. So we tend to think of the extreme examples, which are good to think about too. And then knowing that in our everyday lives, the same thing on a smaller scale happens all the time. And that's a lot more powerful to work with because it's coming up all the time and we can actually make a big difference there. Okay. Oh, and that's just what we were coming up to, that there's a difference between taking the proper steps without hurting the person and hating the person or wanting to cut them out of the company or wherever you work and cause them harm. And that's not the way that we're going to get rid of them anyways. So the most radical thing that we're saying is that basically we have to be adults. We have to act correctly no matter what happens. At least we're starting to try. We're not going to be able to do it all the time until we get more practiced at it. But we're trying to live in a different way where we have a clear, clean conscience. We can sleep well at night. We can meditate easily because we don't have all these things hanging around our mind that are keeping us from doing that. So all these wrongs that we've done to people. So the bottom line is, do the kindest thing that you can in every situation. And just about every time when I want to do something, when I'm irritated, I purposely take it down 3 or 4 notches and try to be as kind as I can, and I never regret that. It always comes out way better. And usually what the other person comes back with, they were thinking something I had no idea, and if I had said what I initially wanted to, it could have ruined a relationship or, you know, just caused a lot of problems that weren't necessary. So that's how I do it in a lot of ways, is I try to, the most kind that I can be in the moment, that's what I do. Even if it's really, like, not feeling right to me, doesn't matter. In that moment, the anger is coming up. It's not an emotion that's going to be logical or something that I want to continue anyways. Okay. Okay. So, if yelling at the people who annoy us was the correct way to remove the annoying person, would it work all of the time or just some of the time? Yep, it would work all of the time if it was the correct way to remove them. And it doesn't work all the time. It's not the correct way. And this kind of answers what we were talking about. Kish and Michael talked about this in class. If there ever comes a day where we understood the objects around us, we would be incapable of these two emotions, the attachment and aversion, that run our life. So based on karma, number 6 is say korwa kor.
Korwa kor.
Korwa kor. So based on all of these things we've talked about, 1 through 5, we're then made to circle around in the cycle of suffering life. It perpetuates itself. We have to undergo this suffering life. We have to spin around in the wheel. So this is Lord Maitreya. Then next we'll go on to Master Chandrakirti. But first we're going to look at the 6 in the list again. Okay, so looking at them all together, here's what they are. The 6 causal steps to creating karma. The first one starts with a bakchak from a previous life where we saw things to be self-existent. The second, two ignorance seeds or bakchaks spring up in our mind. Tendency to grasp to me and mine as self-existent. Then the third one, we look at these pleasant and unpleasant pleasant things, and we think of them as self-existent. The fourth, because of that misunderstanding, we have attachment or aversion. Because of that, we plant more karmic seeds. Because of that, we're made to circle around in the cycle of suffering over and over. So that's how those six steps work together. Okay, so you guys together, Cheryl and Mike together. It will just take a minute or two. You have time though. And read this list to the other person and give your own synopsis on it. Whatever you come to is okay. It doesn't have to be right. It's just your understanding right now based on just learning this. So you're not expected to be an expert. And if you can try to remember it if you want, or you can just read it off of the screen to each other. And then you'll switch.
Oh.
Yeah, and then after you read it, give like your basic understanding of it. Whatever that is.
You want to go first?
So the person with the shortest hair goes first.
Ah, dang.
And you can, yeah, you can, like, abbreviate them. You don't have to read the whole thing. Or you can if you want. Up to you. Just give like a little overview, like your idea of it, like what you understand from it. And it can just be in your own words. Okay, and then you can switch.
Changes.
as a human.
You take your personal
or body to the estate, and in that, another work totally separate from it takes it on. It's because they're
home.
It's really emotional. But again,
if you want to get ready to go, you help people get things up.
Yeah.
Give them rights. Yeah.
Which,
yeah,
like,
so
I mean,
that's like
really
what I try to remember.
Going
like,
out
oh,
my
wait,
way
a
little bit.
Like, and then I judge myself a lot because
so
it's like if I'm having
an
unpleasant
feeling,
I'm like, I shouldn't feel unpleasant. I know this is good. I know this. But it's like, you don't get a choice of feeling unpleasant.
How did it go?
That was good.
Good?
For me, I experienced it as good.
Okay.
Positive result.
We're gonna, I said we were going over the four powers, and so we're going to, kind of quickly, before we go into the next thing. My synopsis? That's
like
what we've been talking
about.
Basically, how I think of it is we're born with the tendency to see things wrong, and then that tendency comes up, and then we start to see things as good as bad, as good or bad. And then we want the good things, we don't want the bad. And then we start to act on that by pulling the good things towards us, pushing the bad things away, and we're planting the karmic seeds to have that same tendency over and over and over, which is what keeps us in the cycle.
So if you saw emptiness directly in a past life, you still have seeds that like force you to see things ignorantly, but so do you remember, or like when you're born you just see the wisdom more, or like you had that direct experience really young?
I've heard this question asked a bunch, and I think one answer I've heard that made sense was, I think this was an answer to this question, is at a really young age you would start to have a lot of experiences where you would be like drawn to the Dharma, and you would have, you know, where you hear the stories about the great sages who are studying tantra at age four or whatever, yeah, or eight or whatever it is. I've heard that as an answer, but I don't really know how it works. I don't, and if I've probably heard it along the way, but I don't really remember right now. So, like, could we have seen emptiness directly in the past and not know it, like in a past life?
I was asking for myself, but just like in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I guess because if you're a high enough, like,
I think we remember.
Seeds to like have them ripen in future lives to like
Well, when you see emptiness directly, you see all your future lives. You might be able to plant particular seeds for certain lives,
yeah,
too. But it doesn't make sense that you would... I don't think you would forget. This is just me thinking about
so
it right now.
You're a little infant, and you're like,
infant. Because you're on the path of habituation, and they say in that path,
yeah,
you don't forget what you've seen.
Okay.
They say that, too. That from that point forward, you won't ever do those negativities because you know.
Yeah.
So by that logic, it wouldn't make sense that you would forget, because then you'd be doing those things again. You wouldn't be heading towards...
But then isn't there... I thought I read that some bodhisattvas can make the choice to forget and go back into suffering in order to help to bring everyone to enlightenment.
So I would say that I think that's probably a misunderstanding of what a bodhisattva is.
Okay.
Whatever book that's from, that's what I would say. But it could be a different school thinks of it that way. But in this school of thought, in the Madhyamika Prasangika, the kindest thing we can do for anyone else is to get completely out of suffering, because that's when we're going to be able to really help them. I'm of no help if I decide to come back and be suffering with everyone else, because I can't help them at all. There's nothing I can do. So there is a thing where Buddhas and Bodhisattvas would be here helping people, but they wouldn't be. We talked about this last week or the week before or something, but it's not that they would be in the cycle of suffering again if it's a Buddha coming back. They would, like, maybe we would see them, but it doesn't mean they're in the same place that we are. So it's not like this room, this place we're in is suffering. It's anyone's mind that we can't see, they could be a Buddha, and they wouldn't be in suffering. So it's kind of a complex question, but...
Like that they're old, yeah. They're like, I don't know, yeah. Sick. They're not necessarily suffering, it's just we experience them as that, right? If they're a Buddha coming back.
Yeah, and there's the idea where a Buddha would come back as our family member, or maybe like our mother or father. They would potentially live an entire life just to do one thing at one point that they know will help us. So there's that idea too. Yeah. So the four powers are how we can purify karma. We'll go through it real quickly. So the first power of the four is refuge. Can basically, the easiest way to think of this is, I just did something that I know is going to cause suffering. And that leads right into the second step. I really wish I hadn't done that. Regret. The first one, I planted this ugly karmic seed. Dang, I wish I hadn't done that. Third step, I'm not going to do that for... Maybe you can say ever. I will never do that again. Or I'm not going to do that same thing for a day, 2 minutes, whatever you're capable of doing. So, I just planted this crappy seed. Wish I hadn't done that. I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to say 5 mantras as the makeup activity. So that's the fourth step. Third step is restraint. Fourth step is, I've heard it called restitution. I don't really like those two words. They don't work that well for me. But basically makeup activity. So I'm refraining from doing that action, and I'm doing a makeup activity.
What was it again?
First one's refuge, then regret, then restraint, and then I don't like restitution, but it's nice with 4 R's. Yeah. Yeah, like makeup activity. And then the fifth step, which isn't, you know, there's not really a fifth step, but the fifth one is rejoice. Awesome, I just purified that karmic seed. I am done with that. It's never coming back. I'm finished. Yes. So anything we do can be purified using the four powers. That's what those are. So going for refuge, thinking of karma and emptiness, like, oh my God, I just planted something really crappy. I really wish I hadn't done that. Not I feel guilty, not I'm a bad person, just dang, I shouldn't have done that. That's going to cause some unhappiness for me in the future. I'm not going to do that again, and I'm going to do a meditation right now on karma and emptiness as the makeup activity, or whatever it is. Awesome, I'm done, I'm purified. So very short introduction into that.
Do you usually have to do it in a meditation?
Mm-mm. I don't think I really ever do the four powers in meditation, actually. Not that you can't, but mostly I do it when I'm doing my book. That'll be like the to-do for whatever negative that I did.
You usually do it with
like right then. So the more you do it, it just goes faster. So you can do it like quickly, even when you're interacting with people or like, you know, someone's talking, or you're waiting in line somewhere, or you're driving.
The second you notice.
You can start to do it. Yeah, faster and faster. Yeah, it's best to do it right away before the seed grows.
Or you forget.
Before what?
You forget.
Oh, yeah. And before you forget.
Would you do a similar thing? A similar type of thing? Or
for what?
Activity?
Yeah.
The makeup the activity.
It would just be some kindness.
Oh. Yeah, for makeup activity, maybe like the opposite thing. I killed, so I'm going to protect life. I killed a spider, so I'm going to
not eat meat or something.
Yeah, not eat meat for a week. Or I'm going to rescue some feeder fish and release them into the river. That sort of thing. Like whatever feels like, what would be a makeup activity for this? Or I said something nasty to someone. Maybe the makeup is apologizing to them if it's appropriate. I like the ones that you can do right away so you don't forget. I don't like the makeup activity that's going to be like sometime in the future I'm going to do this because it's easy to forget.
If it's reframing, because you know how Elaine says don't do it for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can do either. There's some, try both and see how it feels. There's power to saying, I will never do this again. And then maybe you do, but maybe the power of saying that is more important than, you know, like in that moment, you're not intending to. It's not as though you're lying. You're saying, I will not do that again, period. And if that doesn't feel right, then you say, I'm not going to do that for 2 days. But you can already get the sense of the different energy. Like, I can feel that in my body saying, I'm not going to do this for 5 days. It just feels kind of like, eh. And then when I say, I am never doing that again, it's very clear. And it feels more powerful. I don't always do it, but either, you can do either. Yeah.
But then I will forget what it was exactly. And if I do it again, did I make that promise? Did I make that promise to do that, to not do that thing?
But if you forgot, then how did you know if you did it?
I know.
It's okay. If you're not sure, then you just do the 4 powers again, if you do it again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, and then we're going to do the last thing, which is very interesting. I'll explain this in a second. Okay, so say Chubab.
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 This is water analysis. Has anyone heard this before? It's pretty trippy. Okay, so you take a glass of water, a Buddha, a human, and a craving spirit. See it as nectar, water, and pus, respectively. Buddha sees it as nectar, human sees it as water, craving spirit sees it as pus. So I looked up pus, I could not handle putting a picture up there. It's too disgusting. So that's the water and the blood. So craving spirit is a type of, you could call them hungry ghost, and they're a being who has like overdone it in their past lifetime. They've overate all the time, or nothing was ever enough, and so now they're reborn in this life, in this birth where they can't ever be satisfied. a lot of times they have a skinny, long neck and a big stomach, or they have like a teeny tiny mouth where they can't get food in there and they're so hungry. So that's what that being is. And it's cool because I was just talking about this with Mike, and Geshe-la talks about how it's important to eat and keep ourselves healthy, keep ourselves fit, because we have a precious body and we shouldn't damage it. We should take care of it. Because as we were talking about before, there's all these beings who are waiting for us to help them. They're not going to get these teachings or learn from anyone else but us. So if we get a heart attack and die early, there's all these people we have to help, and we just wasted this life. And maybe we had the heart attack because we didn't take care of our body. So, okay, so moving on. Chubab is a whole class that we would do in the monastery about this example of the glass of liquid. So there's the Buddha, human, and craving spirit. Are each of them having a valid perception or a pramana? Each one sees, Buddha sees nectar, human sees water, craving spirit. The reason there's blood is because it's usually said like they see pus and blood. They're all seeing different things, but yes, they're having a valid perception. But then you can't have contradictory pramanas. You can't have contradictory valid perceptions. So what's going on? And the idea is that it's empty, so each person's perception is a valid pramana or a valid perception. 99% of our perceptions are pramanas. We had a course on this. The only times we're not seeing things as they really are when we're under the influence of an extreme emotion. We're convinced somebody's cheating on us with a friend. And we go crazy. We think all these crazy things. And this friend we're convinced they're cheating with could not care less. They have no interest in our partner. Our partner has no interest in them. It's like not even happening. Those are the times when we're not having a valid perception. Or when we're enraged by something. Even just when we see a leaf blow across the road and we think it's a cat or a squirrel, something like that. But the rest of the time, we're having valid perceptions. So according to Master Chandrakirti, we have to understand what's going on with this liquid. We had the teachings on the Nirlangi Gyu. Do you remember what that is? It kind of sounds like what it is. It's the stuff that flopped over into the material cause. So in this instance, the stuff is the water or the liquid. So there's a material cause present, the stuff which turned into water. In this case, the water is the original stuff, or the liquid. There are contributing factors present. In this case, that's each being's karma, which leads them to see the glass of liquid the way they do. One sees it as water, one sees it as nectar, one as pus and blood. When those three beings start to look at the liquid, there are three parts to the liquid: pus, water, and nectar, when the three beings are looking at it. The part of the liquid gets together with the human's karma, and he or she sees the water or the liquid as water. The same with the Buddha. The Buddha's karma gets together with the liquid, and he sees the liquid as nectar. The craving spirit, or the hungry ghost karma, gets together with the liquid, and they have to see it as pus and blood. So this is confusing because one object cannot be water, blood, and pus at the same time. So what Master Chandrakirti says, there's three parts to the water in the way that our body has an arm, head, and legs. When it ceases to be shared by three beings, three beings aren't looking at this, and it's only being looked at by one, then there's only one part. If only one being is there looking at the water, the material cause and contributing factors make it only one thing. And it must be this way since one object can't be three different things at the same time. Can't be water, pus and blood, and nectar. So what's happening is these three beings are seeing, each seeing a different part of the liquid simultaneously. So however many types of beings are looking at the water, their contributing factors, which is the karma, make the water have that many parts. If only a human's present, there'll only be water in the cup. If a human and a Buddha are present, then there'll be nectar and part water. So we could say that each being is perceiving a different aspect, which we have to cook it. It doesn't completely make sense to me either. This gets back to what we were talking about last class. Geshe-la says that mind cannot turn into physical stuff. Physical stuff came from physical stuff before. So we were talking about that last time. So how this works is if I see the boss as bad and you see the boss as good and we're both having valid perceptions, the boss can't be good and bad at the same time. Those are contradicting qualities. But we're both having pramanas or valid perception. Just as the liquid is not simultaneously blood, nectar, and water at the same time, one part acts as a material cause, and each being's karma is a contributing factor. And then there's the question, is it real blood, pus, and water? Yes, they're having a pramana for it. It is real.
If one of them were to drink it, it would be all of that.
Uh-huh. It would be, for the Buddha, it would be nectar. For the hungry ghost, it would be blood and pus. For the human, it would be water. They're all having a valid perception. It's not like they're looking at it. It's not like we're looking at this and just pretending that it's water. I don't know what you're saying, but for me, this is really water for me. It's not as though it's actually nectar, but I'm just pretending it's water or something like that. It actually is that for me. So for the hungry ghost, it's acting as blood and pus. It's really blood and pus. There's a correct valid perception, which is the first reason, and then the second reason is that it functions as blood and pus too. So the bakchaks, we won't go into that right now. So we have to really think about this one. I haven't thought about this example in a long time. And I think what we're going to do for a few minutes, we'll do an intellectual meditation or analytical meditation on it. And we'll turn it around for a little bit in meditation and just see where we come to. So this one, I think, is one idea that we just take home and think about. And we can come back and talk about it next week, too. Because it is really confusing.
Is this related to last week's class with the picture of like how the yelling boss and I and the I consciousness all came from the same seed?
No, because...
Oh, that's a different school.
Yeah. I mean, we could think about it that way, though. And it might be helpful to think about it that way. But the idea, the reasoning behind it that we're talking about wouldn't be the same as in that school. But when we're doing our meditation, think about it that way and see how it works. So we have a few minutes. We'll take just a few minute meditation and think about it. it up nice and tall. And let everything relax. Feel the tension being released. It happens easier than at the beginning of class. And then bring to mind the idea that we're talking about. There's this cup of liquid. 3 different beings are looking at it. A Buddha, a human, a hungry ghost. The Buddha is seeing nectar. Human, water. Hungry ghost, pus and blood. They're all having a valid perception. So how could that work? What Master Chandrakirti says is that there's 3 different parts when the 3 beings are looking at this glass. How would that work? Take a few minutes on your own. Think about it from all different angles that you can come to. Does that make sense? How could there be 3 different parts of 1 glass filled with liquid? Maybe the different parts are each person's perception, each person's label. That makes sense. Then when there's just 1 person there, there would just be 1 part. Are there other options? And maybe moving on from there, depending on however many people are looking at one object, maybe there's that many different parts. If it's not one thing particularly on its own, we're projecting our idea onto a blank screen, then that's the way that we can be completely transformed into a Buddha, to a holy angel. When we're forced to see ourselves a certain way because of our karmic seeds ripening. So at that point, we would be like the Buddha, we'd be forced to see the glass of liquid as nectar. Just as we're forced to see it as water now. And the hungry ghost is forced to see it as pus and blood. Blood and pus. that's why it's important to think about these things, these ideas, because it gets us closer and closer to a deeper intellectual understanding of emptiness. Which helps us along our path until we ultimately see it directly. And maybe you're done with the meditation or want to come back to it later. But letting it go for now. Feeling the weight of your body on the floor of the chair. As we get ready to say our prayers, offering all of this merit, everything we've done tonight, all it took to get here, with our understanding, our deepest understanding of emptiness, karma that we have right now, that we may be completely free of suffering so that we can help all others do the same. That's what we're here for, no less. Puki Chukshing Me Tok Cham Rira Bling Shin Yen De Gen Padi Sangye Shing Du Mik Te Uwar Gi Chokun Am Dak Shing La Chupar Shu Yidam Guru Radna Mandala Kam Niyatayami
Gewa
Di Gewa Kun Sunam Yeshe Sok Sok Shing Sunam Yeshe Le Jung We Dampa Kuni Topar Shum.